Okay, guys, welcome to Codes number 6.
Welcome.
Welcome. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Alex Wolf.
Sir.
My name is Ryan Vera, and thanks for following along to episode 6. Today, we are going to take a little jump into some new territories. We wanted to talk about energy transfer today, and as these calls go, they usually just lead into, you know, many more things, but we need to give it a topic for the title. And there's lots of topics about energy transfer and people's understanding of energy transfer, our understanding of energy transfer, and how we operate in our human vehicles and the energy we carry and the energy that we come into this world with and the energy we leave. So in jumping into this, Alex, when we talked about this code the other day, what came up for you?
Honestly, I was really curious on this one, Ryan, on how energy transfer is a code. I was really showing up to this one more as a student. And I have some general ideas around energy transfer, but I really wanted to understand, you know, how energy transfer is a code for you.
Mm-hmm. Energy transfer really dives in for me learning where we put our work and where we place our energy and where we hold our energy. When we walk around, obviously, when we wake up in the morning, we have a certain amount of energy. And if we don't sleep, we need to go and recharge that energy. Sometimes we get energy from our food. Sometimes we get energy from the sun. But obviously, like, we need to eat. We need to run on certain amount of energy. When we're interacting with people or in business or in life, there's a certain amount of energy that we transfer, and there's a certain amount of energy that can be taken from us. Mm-hmm. When we're interacting with a certain person that might take a little bit of our energy that we give them too much through an argument or through a certain relationship where we don't understand, we're transferring a certain amount of energy. So energy is a very sacred thing of how you spend your energy each day. If you spend your energy poorly on something, then you usually pay for it and your stores are a little bit low. This goes into energy mechanics and Chinese medicine and Qigong and everything as well. There's a place, I don't want to get too deep into it, but there's something called Jing, which is very interesting. And Jing is a type of life force energy, and it's a slow drip. So you can imagine that it's like a drop of water that slowly drips and builds up to a life force. And your ki is kind of that movement, the force, like Jedi. You can imagine the Jing like the wax and the ki like the flame of the candle. Mm. So energy is important when interacting with not only people, with life, with everything, but also with certain plant medicines as well. When we separate the plant medicine from the earth. So let's say we're dealing with mushrooms or ayahuasca or something like this. They're connected to an energy force that's, you know, pulsing through photosynthesis, through the sun, through the ground. When we take these technologies and we produce them to a place where we can actually consume them, the energetic shifts. And when we're using these medicines, we actually trade our Jing energy in order to power them within the system. Hmm. This is why, you know, if you do too much or too many psychedelics or too much marijuana or too much of these substances, you'll notice that your energy starts to get drained after a while. Have you experienced that ever?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very interesting. If you've ever taken a microdose or a macrodose, it works with your Jing energy to produce its like effects within you. So there's always a co-creative trade-off when working with these medicines. Like I've talked about it before, working with, co-creative instead of just an intention and then giving your power to what you're working with. That is one form that I think is quite interesting when working with these medicines. But really it comes down to one of the biggest ideas that I like to play with is the monetary system and money. And energy flow when it comes to money, where we're storing our work. You know, when we go to a job and we work hard, we get a paycheck and we store that in our currency, whether it's the US dollar or the Canadian dollar. When we hold this currency in the bank, it depreciates. It's leaking due to inflation and expansion and all of this. And every time that our elected government or something decides to, you know, spend the money on something that's for our greater good, that robs the future generations as we're walking into more inflation. Your money over time becomes less and less and less valuable. So it causes us to always try to either trick the system, try to win, try to get ahead, do whatever we can to get ahead, or it teaches us to start to create products that are cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and less quality. As you can see the expansion, and as you see, if you look around some places, we see a lot of billboards, we see a lot of different ingredients that are very cheap to make something taste a certain way. MSG is much cheaper than actually sourcing out organic quality products and the creation of something like a mastery of recipes to put together a delicious flavor. That becomes further away from being economically viable going into a competitive market in an economy with a built on top of an inflating monetary system. And then obviously we get into the debt to create the inflation. But as this debt expands and as our ability to store our energy expands and expands and leaks, the quality of everything around us goes down and it changes where we're putting our energy and our attention. We're almost chasing things. It's like we're carrying a sieve full of water and it's leaking as we hold our money. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting when you look at technologies like Bitcoin. This is what I wanted to tap into a little bit today, mm-hmm. because it might be a little advanced, but understanding like the underlying aspects of Bitcoin when it comes to energy transfer, right? And understanding Bitcoin at this level, in a simplistic level, we could say that Bitcoin, there's a finite supply. You can never make any more of this. And when you're working with Bitcoin, you could look at it as one Bitcoin always equals one Bitcoin, instead of one Bitcoin equals 10,000, 40,000, 50,000, 60,000, because we're actually measuring Bitcoin from our current system instead of understanding it as a parallel system. So if we are working and doing our jobs and creating things in an economy, we have to somehow store our energy somewhere, right? So if we build a
financial house, energy you're talking about, is that what you're saying?
I would just say life force too. Life force, attention. Financial energy could be looked at as your life force, because everything that you do, you want to create some sort of productivity or value in a system right, by moving into an economy. And in this productivity or value, every day that you get up and work, you want to store your money so that you can spend it on something later, unless you intend to spend that money as you make it, spend your energy mm-hmm. as you make it. Then you get old, you get older, you can't work, you're not as sharp, you know, something for later. So it's interesting to understand Bitcoin and proof of work and storing your energy and some things that you can go back to, like the gold standard. Mm-hmm. Back in the times before money was separated from gold, we could see in the past in things that we talk about, like Tartaria and some of the massive cathedrals and mm-hmm. and buildings that were built in this time, mm-hmm. you know, were done.
Airships.
Yeah, they were done at a time where you could transfer your energy over a long period of time and build something like that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't plastic. It wasn't built on, you know,
concrete.
And it wasn't only, you know, controlled by certain things. So is that resonate any with you at all? Like any insights there? Cause I know that the audience is probably going to have some questions there as well. And I'm just, it's quite a deep topic. So kind of touching on it a little bit.
Right. So let me try to dissect it a little, get a little clearer for the simple folks like myself and the ones listening. So everything is energy, I'm with you on that, right, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is energy. And so let's say if we're using it in the financial system, or we're talking about that. So you do work, or you have some sort of exchange for a currency,
mm-hmm.
and that's an energy, right?
Current. And then, yep.
Current, right?
Yep.
Currency. And then you either put that currency in a bank, or you spend it, or you give it to someone in exchange for a service or a goods, or whatever the case may be, some sort of exchange. And now there's an energy exchange there. And you're saying in the current financial system, we put our energy in a bank and it's depleting because of the way that system is set up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we could get into fiat currency. Fiat currency is pretty much based on a debt system, mm-hmm. as far mm-hmm. as I understand. So it's a leak. You're saying there's an energy
leak. Yes. A major. And the way that the fiat system works is they're constantly expanding it and then trying to control it with interest rates and bonds and all of these things. When in fact it's a major energy transfer from one hand to a few, from the many to the few, right?
Mm, in the system. Right.
And if you had put $100 in your bank account 10 years ago, the purchasing power of that today is much different, right? The same with our grandparents and same with our great grandparents. The purchasing power loses its effect, and it affects things geopolitically. That's why we're seeing certain, you know, people start to see this system for what it is and try to, you know, work outside the system. Like there's different, there's different countries that are, you know, trying to organize to be around the SWIFT system. There's certain countries that are adopting Bitcoin as legal tender right now. Argentinian new president is talking about the central bank and the inflation there, which is absolutely devastating for people that have worked their entire lives and saved money and worked very hard, that the decisions of a few going to war and bailing out certain agendas and everything spends their money without them being able to vote on it. It's theft, right? So we're building into a system that is dependent on theft, right? You didn't get to vote in a way that told you how your money could be spent on things, you know, mm-hmm. sending billions of dollars outside of the country to, you know, support agendas.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things with Bitcoin is that it makes things like that, like war, very, very expensive. It's kind of like if you bring it back to the days of war where people used gold, mm-hmm. where they traded with gold. If you went to war too long, your gold reserves would, you know, outlast it. They would run out and deplete. So you would think twice about, you know, war is expensive. Is this something I need to do? Is there a benefit here? With things now, you just print more money. But it's interesting because of all the noise and all the attention and all the draws to the quick dopamine hits and the MSG and all the poisons that they put in everything. It really creates a bunch of noise and distraction of what's actually happening over the long term with our energy, with our work. Now I would like to think that, you know, where we are back in a Renaissance period. A Renaissance period is beautiful things built with attention over time, brick by brick by brick, so your grandchildren could enjoy them, you know, so that they could see the marvels of their ancestors. And now, you know, we're moving into a time where that's not happening anymore. You know, things are crumbling and there's a lot of changes coming up. And I would say understanding Bitcoin takes quite a bit of time and effort and work, just like the Renaissance that is created. And it's not something to jump into or try to get into just because you think the number is going to go up, because when it does go up, you'll sell it. But it's something to look at and study right now in fact of energy transfer.
Mm-hmm. Right? It is a lot of energy is definitely transferring to Bitcoin right now. It's flying. It's up.
Yeah.
Almost every day it's up, keeps going up for the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, I would say that the price of Bitcoin in fiat terms is really aligned with the more people that start to get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a signal to the amount of people that are looking at it and that kind of get it. And after 14 years, Bitcoin going into another halving in April, more and more people start to look at it and understand it. And they start to look at it from a different point of view or a different perspective other than standing mm-hmm. In their system,
mm-hmm.
measuring it. But, you know, we could see a day where energy was actually measured in Bitcoin, in Satoshis, because Bitcoin is very interesting. It has to be created by energy mm-hmm. or work. You can't acquire Bitcoin any other way. Like, you can't print money. You can't take out a loan on debt, but you have to acquire it through work. You either have to work, put your energy in and trade your productivity or value for Bitcoin directly, or you need to take the money or energy that you've stored and worked and saved while it's leaking and transfer it over to the Bitcoin system, or you have to mine it. And when you mine it, you need power, you need energy, you need hydroelectric, you need coal power, you need whatever type of power, but Bitcoin is created through energy only. And there's no way to get it other than that. Mm-hmm. And it's also protected by energy in that way. It's, yeah.
Good question. So you're saying it's created through energy only.
Mm-hmm.
And is that energy exclusive to electricity or?
Well, yeah, the energy actually powers, you could say, for very simple terms, computers, miners, right? And the miners have a specific code that they have an algorithmic processing power that rewards that there's rewards and transaction fees. So when you send a Bitcoin transaction, it's the miners that are actually competing for that transaction that send it through energy. So you have to spend some of your Bitcoin in order to send that energy. So energy is transferred. So if you hold Bitcoin and then decide to spend it on something, you're transferring that stored energy into a productive asset or value at your choice without having to ask permission to anyone. So mm-hmm. it gives you the power to actually store and hold your own energy instead of putting it into a bank or putting it into any other system. You could put your energy in gold. It's very, there's similar nuances to gold. One of the first layers that you understand in Bitcoin that is digital gold at about 100 hours to 1,000 hours. After that, you start understanding that it's a little bit more. But if you put your money in gold, the problem with gold is that it's not verifiable. So you don't know how
meaning,
much.
You
don't know how much gold is in the world. It's impossible to find. They could find more. Nobody's auditing people's vaults. There's paper gold. There's places where hold your gold and say, I actually have it, but they don't. And they give you a piece mm-hmm. of paper saying that you own it. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways that you can manipulate the price of gold. From my understanding, it should be 60 times the price of what it is today.
Wow.
And then gold, you actually have to spend energy and work to protect it physically, right? If you have a lot of gold, you got to put some guards outside. If you want to move it, you got to hire a truck and move it. It's very hard to take over borders.
Hard to travel with it, that's for sure.
Very hard to travel with it. And with Bitcoin, all you need to do is memorize 12 randomized words of your seed in your head, and you can cross anywhere and bring your wealth with you to any country that treats you better, mm-hmm. which is very interesting. There was a girl... I guess there's a sex trade from North Korea to China, and there's women that escape from North Korea that go into China, and they have to work their payment off in the sex trade. And there was a lady that talked about it, that she actually got her hands on some Bitcoin and memorized her 12 words. And when she got across, she was able to pay them in Bitcoin and not actually go into the sex trade. I'll put a link in the podcast notes here. We can hear her speech, but it's very phenomenal. And I know for most people talking about Bitcoin, it's a big concept. It's a big understanding. It does take work and it does take layers to learn. And I know talking on this podcast might be a little early, December 9th, but you'll remember whatever we play this, you'll remember some of the things I say as you see what Bitcoin does over the next couple of years, especially with ETFs and everything. It's a wild ride, Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It destroys people. You know, it can.
How does it destroy people?
Well, the lessons people learn by not doing the work to understand Bitcoin, you know, if somebody gets in Bitcoin at the top and they're just doing it, trying to ride it up to try to make more money, and then it drops, and on the drop, they sell it all. You have a choice when you buy Bitcoin at the top and it starts to go down, you have a choice. You either sell it or you go down the rabbit hole and learn why you need to hold it. And a lot of my teachers and people I hang around that have been in Bitcoin for a long time, you know, they've gone in at 1200 where it dropped down to like $30, you know, and held on. But that 1200 now, you know, for one Bitcoin is $44,000 today in fiat measurement. So it's you could say it's almost like an early adopter technology. It's going to be very, it reflects people's understanding and what they're trying to do with it as it goes up and down. But there is an algorithm there of the people that hold it for a long term. People are holding it for their children or their grandchildren in a system that is uncertain right now. Right, it's something that it's been the best performing asset of all time ever since its creation. And we've never seen anything like this. When Bitcoin was released, it was around 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I remember getting an offer to buy Bitcoin at 25 cents in 2013.
Could you imagine when that person said, like, hey, fast forward to 2023, it's $44,000 US for one of these? It's unfathomable, right? It's just like
unfathomable,
right? So could you imagine Bitcoin being valued towards energy today at $1 million?
I can imagine it for sure.
6 years, you know?
I could see it. I see a tremendous, tremendous opportunity and possibility and upswing in Bitcoin as people start to understand what the financial system is actually based on. And as it starts to crumble, like you mentioned, a lot of things there, Brian, that you brought up that I want to touch on. We'll stick on the Bitcoin theme while we're here. You mentioned a halving. There's a halving coming up. What does that mean for the people listening?
So the halving is very interesting. So in Bitcoin's code, every 4 years, half the amount of Bitcoin is available. It's cut in half that's being released by the miners. So the miners compete for a block reward. And that block reward, when it started, was 50 Bitcoin. And then it went down to 25, then 12.25. Now it's 12.5. Now it's 6.25. And then it halves in April of this year. So this creates an absolute scarcity. There's only 21 million Bitcoin that are ever available. And these are set to release over the next 122 or so years. So every 4 years, half the amount is released. And when half the amount is released, more people actually start to need it. There's less available. More people understand it. They hold it. So one Bitcoin actually translates into 100 million Satoshis. And the very last reward on the algorithm is one Satoshi. So you got to think 1/100th of a Bitcoin right now is the entire reward in 120 so years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The reward right now.
Yeah, what's the reward right now?
In fiat terms?
Sure.
Say 44,000 today. So the reward right now is 275,000 per block. Right? So they compete blocks. It gets a little bit complicated here, but not so much. Transactions make up blocks. The miners compete for those blocks. When the miners win the block, they get rewarded 6.25 Bitcoin. So what happens in the mining pools is that they put in kind of hash rate. So all the hash rate competes for the blocks collectively. And then when the rewards come, they split it up between everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a different way to work on it. But yeah, so what's interesting too is because you can what we're seeing right now is the ETF approval, spot ETF approval, which is kind of around the corner. What that means is that a lot of people right now, it's kind of complex, but not. I mean, when you go set up a bank account, you can do it online, but the first time you set it up, you got to show your ID, you got to go in, you got to do this and that. There's a process. The process of actually like setting up and storing your own Bitcoin is, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hold your own
keys. Not that hard.
Right. So, but it is like for most people that are in a noisy world and don't understand it, they want more access and liquidity and they want somebody else to hold their Bitcoin. So when an ETF is approved, the ETF is a spot ETF. That means that all of these big financial institutions will be offering Bitcoin openly to trade. Like you can actually buy shares with the ETF and it becomes liquid, but you get to invest in an asset as it comes up. Over top. So with a spot ETF, the ETFs actually have to purchase all the Bitcoin and like show that they actually have that Bitcoin because it's a spot and not a futures. So you're looking at hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars from BlackRock and very large institutions that are going to have to go Vanguard and have to go purchase a whole bunch of Bitcoin so that their investors can have access to it. In you know April, there's going to be half as much available, and the more that people understand Bitcoin, the more they hold on to it. Like me personally, I acquire Bitcoin for my grandson. You know, it's for two generations from now.
Mm-hmm.
So I read an article the other day that my friend was a part of writing, and it's the same way that I think. It says Bitcoin is kind of for 60 years ahead of you right now, and you know my son. I'll teach him Bitcoin and to hold it. And, you know, the world will be changing. The monetary system will be changing. There's different central bank digital currencies that are coming in. And for those of you that don't quite understand that, central bank digital currencies are a way that governments can issue a digital currency, but they can also program it. So on a specific day, like the lockdowns, you know, that we walked into, if you went into certain grocery stores or department stores in Canada, they actually blocked off. You weren't allowed to buy anything but food. They blocked off toys and everything in some places. In places like Australia, weren't allowed to go out after a certain time. Right now, there's different people that don't like eating red meat because cows farting creates holes in the ozone or whatever that means.
Nonsense. Yeah, bullshit.
I mean, this is a slow pace. It's not going to be tomorrow. All of a sudden they cut everything off, but through generations and decades, things become normalized, right? So like slowly, hey, your carbon footprint is too high. You know, you can only spend, there's an emergency. We need to do this. It's also big for being able to collect taxes with central bank digital currencies. But basically you're locked into a system that controls price signals and controls the exchange of your energy. Now imagine that you're working hard, you're a plumber, or you're an entrepreneur, you're whatever, and you store your money in this central bank digital currency. Like, okay, you can hold my money, and then they tell you how you can spend it, when you can take it out, what you can spend it on. And you're like, hey, I don't like this. I'm going to take out cash. Sorry, there's no cash anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really hold your energy. You can't hold, where are you going to store your energy? Okay, you can put it in an asset.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you can put it in a house or an asset, and maybe the asset you can rent, but maybe they change the laws because they're changing the laws in Canada with Airbnb.
Mm.
Right now in BC, they said that you can't have a secondary dwelling and rent it as an Airbnb. You can only use a portion of your house and rent it out when you're not there.
Wow,
they're doing this because they want to control like raising rental prices, but they don't actually. Understand that, you know, sending money outside the country and the different policies might also be affecting that in some way. Again, mm-hmm. nothing that the people really got to decide on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny with energy transfer is that you're working really hard and you're really passionate about something. And it's interesting, like when you come into this world, you have to kind of pick a career when you go through school. I got to pick a career and I'm going to learn that career and I'm going to do that career. And you can do really well at that career and you can end up enjoying it. You know, but it gives us less ability to pick something that we're kind of streaming source in, something that we're really aligned to, something that we want to build over time, something quality, something we want to leave for our family. Because you can buy a house and build a house, and now, you know, the interest rates, you're paying, you know, quite a bit more. Like your the costs in Canada are like double for your mortgage if you're on variable mm-hmm. or going there. So your energy is working and you're putting money into this house that is appreciating somewhat depending on interest rates and the system. And you want to leave this to some family member in the future, but there's no stopping them and raising property tax or carbon tax or shut off your power tax or all these things that they're attempting right now, which is very mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. But as the money gets inflated and expanded and the debt is created, the system tries to absorb back through taxation and high taxation, just taxing ridiculous things, you know, like going out at night, there's a tax, whatever it may be, right? So this is happening right now. It's happening at, you know, a little slow pace, and there's no real going back from it at this point. And if you zoom out and you kind of look further than the year ahead of you or the 5 years ahead of you, but you look at yourself and you talk to your future self, that's like 15 years ahead of you right now. I mean, what did you do today to give me a better life now? You worked really, really hard in a system. You did what you had to do and to provide you with something like this, but now you're stuck where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
You can't leave. You can't take your money out. You don't have the choice. So one of the interesting things with Bitcoin, whether you know hold all your money in it or all your energy in it or 1%, it gives you a certain feeling of responsibility and accountability and a certain energetic that, hey, I worked for 10 hours today, and whether it be framing or plumbing or coaching or whatever, and I stored my energy in this Bitcoin system that works like this. It's proof of work. Now I can spend that whenever I want. I can put it here. I can sell it. I can do whatever. I can hold it for my future. I can see what happens, whatever. The more you understand Bitcoin is the more you actually start to do that, because it's a code. It's a reversal code in this expansion system of shitty quality stuff. You know, it's like, as we learn, you know, you and I both like to create really high quality products
mm-hmm.
with a lot of energy in them. And we love the person picking up our products, listening to the glass, listening to this, loving the taste, loving what it does. And then mm-hmm. you have to spend so much energy to kind of show that to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
When it's better just to create a cheap product and some cheap ads and run some money through and some algorithms and get it out there and, like, you know, tell people narratives that, hey, this is really working for you, right? And it's funny because you and I both want to create these beautiful products and time, and, like, it seems like we're always running out of time. So everything gets more expensive, and shipping and traveling and fuel and wars and all of this stuff that none of us have anything to do with or any power over is affecting our energy output and our value and our production, which is really interesting just to tune into that code. You know, and how much noise and how much distraction and how much, like, anxiety and different aspects that we all feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
We all feel it, even if we pretend we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some people that really got ahead and they're doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's a lot of people that, you know, they're like, what's going on? Why is my rent going up so much? What happened over the last couple of years?
Yeah.
Why is the cost of living going up so much? Like, they're seeing signals everywhere. Right? The signals are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Things are getting more expensive and cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cheaper quality and more expensive in price.
And zoom out and zoom forward 10 years. Is there some sort of magic intervention that's coming along that's going to change that?
Doesn't look like it. You know, there's a bit of hope here in the United States with RFK. He's a completely different type of leader than we've seen in this Western world in a long time. If he gets in, is remain to be seen, but I don't know if I'd call that an intervention, but I'd say he's definitely gives some hope, you know, and hope is not that high of a frequency to live in, but it's obviously better than despair. But I agree with what you're saying, Ryan. It's not like there's there's nobody really coming to save us and drastically turn things around. But that RFK did come to mind just because he's such a, you know, he's such a refreshing candidate.
If
and
he
he's
does,
a Bitcoiner as well.
Yeah. And he talks about Bitcoin because he understands it, and different presidents are talking about it. Argentinian new president is taking the central bank and using it as a pinata, you know, and hitting it, which is very interesting. Although politics are politics, and, you know, I don't really personally, because the politics are built on a very house of cards. I don't personally put a lot of trust and faith into politics. I know things that need to be changed are changed over decades and generations. And I know the things that we're experiencing now were not done yesterday. They were done, started decades ago, by the same people, by the same type of system that we're in. It's just an interesting, energetic, playful thing to play with something like Bitcoin, the idea of it. Because you don't have to ask permission. It's permissionless. It's trustless.
Trustless. What do you mean it's trustless? What do you mean by that?
So it's interesting, trustless. When we actually work and store energy in a bank, we have to trust the bank to hold it, right? And then we have to trust the government to insure the bank in case that money gets stolen. And then we have to trust our system. So there's a trusted third party when we're using, you know, our energy and transferring it. Basically, we're working and then we're giving a portion of our energy to a system. And it, and sure, the system provides many, many things like healthcare and roads and all of these things. I'm not sure if those are balanced out as much as I would say, but we're trusting a third party, an intermediary to work with our system.
Right.
Bitcoin is trustless because it's built on code. It's built on open source code. It's you see what's happening and you hold the keys with doing something. Like, you don't have to trust the third party for your Bitcoin to, in order to work. It's built on a code that is open source and open book and open ledger that's reinforced by energy, by work and energy. That's why it's very hard to attack Bitcoin, because of the proof of work mining. It's physically hosted in this physical world, and it transfers this physical energy from this physical world into a digital space, which is interesting, through the energy. So it's capturing an energy and building up an energy, and then releasing it to people that understand it. And then it's creating a scarcity over the next 120 years. And during this time, it's like, it gives you freedom to transact. It's immutable, which is very interesting. It means that the code can never be changed. So something that you get into, and you guys have noticed, probably I haven't talked about cryptocurrencies because I'm a proponent of Bitcoin, because I've done enough work on Bitcoin. When you're working with Bitcoin, the immutability is that you can't change the code. So when you actually decide to transfer your energy and hold it in the Bitcoin system, nobody's in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years is going to change that original contract or code that you originally got in on, which feels good, because, you know, if you pour all your energy and hold it in Bitcoin, and then 10 years, they're like, actually, we changed our mind. We're going to change the way we do this. Right? That's the immutability of it. So this is where the forking comes in. When every time somebody tries to change Bitcoin, it's got an immune system and it forks off. So you can actually steal the code, change it, and then run your own system on it. So it just forks away, but the original code continues. And you can choose to enter it or leave it. It's permissionless. You don't need to ask anyone's permission. So anyone around the world, Africa, Korea, North Korea, Singapore, Canada, whatever, anybody can participate. Like, you don't need a bank account. So which is interesting, was we're seeing geopolitically a lot of people using Bitcoin and in places where they're debanked, a form of trade, right? And because we come and live very close to the money printer in the West, here in Canada and US and the top countries, we don't feel the effects of the inflation of money as much as the rest of the world. So it's kind of like the West kind of gets in last, unless you really pay attention and do the work, and then people get that need. But imagine the energetics of, you know, you're in a system and you can choose where to store your energy, and you're measuring Bitcoin obviously from the perspective of the fiat system, which is a completely different system. So money and fiat and that whole system and central banks is its own protocol layer. It's its own level. And what we do is we build businesses on top and our lives on top and our birth certificates and all of our commerce and currency and everything on top of this protocol, which is a big trust that has the rules of this protocol. When you go to Bitcoin, you're able to take your life force energy or your working energy there is rails to get into Bitcoin and transfer it over to another protocol or another system that operates on a code. And this code is open source and it keeps running every 10 minutes. It does the same thing, 10 minute blocks. You can join, you can leave, you can mine, you can not mine, you can do whatever you want with Bitcoin. You can sell it, not sell it, but Bitcoin doesn't care. It just still runs on the same code consistently, consistently, consistently. And people get to either pour their attention and energy and build on it and build with it, or they can jump back into the fiat system, or they can build in the fiat system and transfer a portion of their energy to this other system because they understand it and they believe in it. And it's kind of another rail for them to store their energy. And it's like this free will choice, which is permissionless, you can do that. But when you want to jump back into the other system built on the protocols, there's more rules and rules and rules and rules and rules of how we can spend our energy. Now in China, they're doing this with the CBDCs, you know, and they have a system where they score you on how good of a citizen you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you do things or you say something bad about the government or something, you get a low level and you're not allowed to take the train for a month.
Social credit system.
Yes. Yes. And this social credit system is a way that this monarch or this country or this organization is interacting with their citizens, right? There's other words for that. With their energy, with their working energy, you know, and the only way that we're seeing it now, the only way to operate outside of that is to go outside and barter or to use cash to trade or trade something, right? So it's very interesting that we have a global financial permissionless, trustless, immutable proof of work system that is valued all around the world that you can do that outside of any system digitally, right? And it's like not even Putin or Biden can stop a Bitcoin transaction, right? So it's like the freedom to transact and the freedom to spend and the freedom of movement of your energy seems like certain things that are important to a lot of people, including myself. You know, when I put my life force, when I trade my life force for productivity and value, and when I bring my creativity into this world, I like to have the option of what I can do with it, where I can put it, you know. Mm-hmm. And sure, we have to play the game, the Matrix game. We all play it. That's the game we're born into, and we can get very good at it, and we can play the game and enjoy it. There's nothing wrong with that. You can play the debt game system quite well. For an individual person that is walking a path or the path, Bitcoin is a great teacher. It's a great teacher to take accountability to holding your own energy, and people are scared. There was a gentleman in the UK that has $250 or $220 million US of Bitcoin on a hard drive, and he forgot his password. So it's interesting. He's offered the biggest tech companies and government agencies and everyone in the world. He said, if you can open this Bitcoin, he has one more chance for the password, you can have half of it. So you got over $100 million bounty on any technology, AI, quantum computer, anything that can find this password. And no luck.
Can't do it. Yeah.
Can't break it. So what's interesting is his lesson teaches the next person because you're like, okay, like I have an accountability to hold my seed properly.
Mm-hmm.
12 words, do what you would. You write your 12 words down, fires, floods, losing, travel, whatever. That's up to you. It's like protecting your diamond or your gold, but nobody could open this guy's wallet for $100 million. Wow, it is secure.
Super secure. How many, Ryan, makes me wonder, how many Bitcoins are currently
lost out there? Out there.
No, not lost. How many that are out there? You said there's 21 million coins available.
Let me see right now.
You said there's 21 million coins that will ever be available?
Ever be, and they're being released over the next 120 so years through halvings every 4 years. So each halving gets down. Let's see here. Current supply, I thought this was higher, but according to, let me look at another source here. I believe there's over 19 million.
19 million are out there?
I believe so. 19.6 million out of the 21 million. So like 96% or so of the Bitcoin has already been released. So the rest, that small portion, is going to be released over the next 120 something years.
Wow.
Makes you think, right? What's this technology worth? It's not what is Bitcoin worth in dollars or monetary. It's what is it worth as an energy transfer?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If this system doesn't let you do something, can I opt out for this system through some sort of energy transfer? Can I create a productivity or an asset?
Mm-hmm.
Value for somebody where I can trade their energy. And what's interesting is when you start to study Bitcoin longer and longer and longer and longer, and you have lots of stores of Bitcoin, you consider what you purchase and what you buy in life and if it's important. So it's a big teacher, because you're like, this Bitcoin is like, it's sucking up value. The more people that understand it, the more valuable it becomes. So if I have to spend some of this Bitcoin in something, I better need this. I better look at what I'm spending on, because this energy transfer, I'm actually taking it away from my future.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm spending energy from my future, which is the opposite of debt, right? It's like, I'll spend my credit card now and pay for it later. Right? So it's interesting. And this gets me to a point. So what's very interesting in Bitcoin is something that I'm going to be doing for my family, is that I'm going to send transactions to the future. So if I can actually capture, 4 years of work and send it to the future. So if I purchase a certain amount of Bitcoin today, if I say, since we're talking in the past, let's say I have $1,000. Let's say I have $500 of Bitcoin right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I send a transaction to the year. Let's say my son is one almost, he will be 20 years, and then his son will be 20. So let's say 50 or so years in the future. So today is 2023, 2073.
Mm-hmm.
I can send this $500 worth of Bitcoin that will only be available on a specific block or date in 2073.
Wow.
Yes. And it can't be opened. It can only be opened on that date with that 12 word.
Wow.
So I can leave this 12 word key code for my grandson.
Wow.
So I'm actually sending to the future. And if Bitcoin was at 10 cents in 2009, and today it's $44,000 and it's soaking up as the system creates, what's Bitcoin in 50 years? What's $500 of Bitcoin? So I'm capturing a massive amount of work and energy
mm-hmm.
now, and I'm sending it to the future because I'm mm-hmm. early in the protocol. And what this does is it takes the stress away from me trying to like build out in this system, this leaking system for my family in the future, when mm-hmm. all I need to do is be able to pass down the teachings and knowledge generationally, and they'll be rewarded
mm-hmm.
then. And it's interesting with me, with probabilities and timeline, when I send this transaction to my grandson in the future and write him mm-hmm. a letter, is he reading it at the same time that I'm writing it? And have I changed the trajectory of my family in that way because I was able to do this? And there's no mm-hmm. other system. There's nothing else that has the ability to do this that we've ever seen, ever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine you did this in 2000 when you were offered Bitcoin at 25 cents?
Mm-hmm.
What if you said like, okay, I'm going to buy 1,000 Bitcoins, $250, And I'm going to send it to myself in 2023, December 9th, today. Okay, let's see. Let's see what 1,000 Bitcoin, well, 1,000 Bitcoin is 4.44 million. Is that right? Let's see. 1,000 Bitcoin. How many numbers is that? $43 million. $44 million. Hard to comprehend.
That's insane.
Is that not? Yeah. It's hard to comprehend. But if you spent $250 10 years ago and sent it to yourself in the future.
Is this the highest Bitcoin's ever been?
It was 69, I think, last cycle, and it peaks.
Right.
In fiat terms, I think that over the next couple of years, it's really going to surprise people.
Yeah.
Of what it can do.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, without getting too deep, I'm trying not to get too deep into technicalities speaking to you, just putting ideas that people can kind of research more themselves, but just kind of talk about what's important to me and what I've been speaking with you guys just about energy transfer and parallel systems with different rules. And this is open source. In the future, like code will be the governing thing of everything, whether it's the AI code when it comes to law or the governmental code, it'll be locked up digitally and worked with code. And Bitcoin is a major code. They say like, when you get the red pill, you know, you escape the matrix, and then Bitcoin gives you the orange pill. We call it somebody getting orange pill, but you got to do the work, just like acquiring Bitcoin, because there's a lot of stuff that comes along the way in studying Bitcoin. There's shit coins that come up. There's altcoins. There's proof of stake. A lot of people think I'm too late for Bitcoin. I need to get into this altcoin. It's going to exponential. And then I can buy Bitcoin. Everyone thinks the same thing. Just for listening.
Yeah.
It's better. It's got better utility. It's got all this. The more you learn, the more deeper you go, the more you understand that mostly these other coins are just harvesting your attention.
Yeah.
And your attention is what powers them. And I mean, by all means, go for it. And, you know, it's a lot of narratives of what things can do or will be or could be, which is kind of a feeling of a gambling or thing. And by all means, learn. Go do. I wish you the best of luck. Bitcoin is different. It's something you can understand and study. And I know people with 30,000 or 40,000 hours working in Bitcoin for multiple years, and they still like blown away every day. Every day, they still can't understand it.
Wow, so that says a lot.
Yeah. So it's
you mentioned Ryan that you know, this is the system is crumbling. The bank system is crumbling, and it's switching to these central bank digital currencies, CBDCs.
Yeah.
So could you say that this is the fall of an empire?
Yeah, but I think the fall of the US dollars is quite powerful. It's been around for a long time. So I don't think things crumble overnight. I think little pieces come down from the systems, and they try to patch it up with like duct tape or plaster. I would say the quality of the building and the system, if the fiat or the current system was a building, I would see the foundation and quality of that building and the things that have been built on top of it are losing its structure a little bit. I would say that the central bank digital currencies, whenever they do come, will be introduced interestingly. You know, they'll be introduced almost like you want them. Who knows? You know, going into things like, you know, as you know, it's tough for some people out there right now. You know, things are going up, AI is coming, like you really got to put in the work now. And you know, in a very noisy world. And it, you know, when the government offered handouts before, everyone lined up.
Yeah.
You know, so things like this change over periods of time, you know, over decades and generations, and then our children become normalized to it. Like it's always been that way. So we have an interesting time right now with all this change, with especially our generation growing up in the 80s and the cartoons then. And, you know, it's, we have an interesting time as our generation is kind of in the middle of it all. You have the boomer and the older generation which holds all the wealth, and they have the new generations that haven't had the experience that we have, and we're kind of in the middle of, you know, learning that we've been kind of lied to. Our generation, and our generation is starting to have children, which is called Generation Alpha, which is interesting. And, you know, the last few years have been pretty interesting, and I'll never forget them. A lot of people forget them. I don't forget, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, something how it goes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
But really, like, the signal really came for me strong, came for me strong during those times, you know. And when you get into Bitcoin study, watch some podcasts on it, read some books, understand it. First thing it does is it starts to teach you about the system around you. And then your connection with production and productivity and a thriving economy is you know, built on productivity, right? Being able to produce value. And this goes to our creative, like, business to me is very spiritual. You know, it's how we commerce and trade, interact and communicate with other human beings and our brothers and sisters and families and everything. And it's a very spiritual, it's become a very spiritual process for me, how we commerce, because we're always commerce and trading and trading energy and information. And personally, I like that to be very clean. I like that to be very enjoyable. And I like to be able to pour the creativity that I'm tapped into and that I'm here working with and working on in this incarnation, and to be able to produce something of value and produce something of value that can last and be passed down to our generations without having to trick the system, poison people, or cheap out our work. You know? So it's an interesting transitional period, you know. And when my son is of age, Bitcoin, you know, a lot of, it's very early for the technology that's built on top, but maybe he has a choice now. He said, I can build into the system that is now, which is cool, it's technology, this, or I can start building on this other emerging system that's like 20 something years old. You know, it's interesting to have that choice, right? One is slower. One is like proof of work, Godspeed, 10 minute blocks, perfect pace, building something. Cause you and I both know it takes time to build something great. And as you build something great and you pour your creativity into it and you see it come alive, like a business or a house you build or a relationship or a piece of art or a poem or a video, it's really like you feel a lot of joy and connection and happiness. For me personally, when I'm able to create something that's like beautiful and lasts, when I don't create something cheap that just breaks me, you know, tricks the system, which is, it seems like we're going more into, we're in a noisy world, you know, with a bunch of shit.
You know, imagine, noisy world, and people are looking for instant gratification and not having to do the work. So they're looking for these little tricks, and it just ends up creating more work for them to do anyway. So it's funny. People, there's no shortcuts. You know, we talked about that on another one, but there's a lot of people out there that, that are promising, you know, a solution via shortcut, but I don't believe in that. So I wanted to, you brought up a lot of the good stuff there, Ryan, really great, great sharing today. So we started this off, you know, on energy transfer and life force. You wake up in the morning, let's say for the people listening, they wake up in the morning with a certain amount of energy. You say there's two ways I want to go with this. One is, like, let's say with the energy that you wake up in the morning or that you have, do you believe or do you think that you have a certain amount of life force energy that's granted to you in this incarnation that will be, you know, finite for your life, and you could tap into that as you go, you know, let's say or do you think that there's ways that you can attain energy, you know, or absorb energy? What do you think about that? What comes up for you?
Yes and yes.
Nice.
Yes and yes. You could say, let's do a thought experiment. Okay. You could say that we're kind of born into a system that's already been here. And this system operates in a way that's closed loop. It's, if you look at the Fibonacci sequence and fractals and everything, what happens is they repeat themselves over until it actually like stops and runs
spiral
out,
yeah,
spirals inward.
Yep.
So energy mechanics is very much like this. So when we're born into this world, we have a certain amount of life force, but it's almost as if everything around us is kind of designed to capture an essence of this force. Mm-hmm. And then we need to replenish. Obviously, we can replenish by eating better, by being more healthy, by being more conscious and aware, by taking certain supplements, by clearing our energetics and traumas, and doing what we can to extend this life force, especially when we wake up in the morning. What we choose to think about, what we choose to interact with, where we choose to go, obviously is a big lesson. But we can kind of sense when our energy is low and when our energy is high. Mm-hmm. But when working with kind of open source mechanics, it works a little different. This is something I taught in my course. It's a little bit advanced, but you know, we are all connected to source. We're source beings, and as many people would say, we're connected to God. We run God through us. This connection is very, very valuable. It's a beautiful amount of creativity and exploration and discovery within this life force. Obviously, our bodies break down after a certain amount of time. Our cells stop dividing in the way that they can, and we go home. How long we live, maybe in past civilizations or past genetics, could have been much longer for the experience here. But if we're running a specific amount of frequency from open source, like outside of these Fibonacci sequences or some of these type of mathematical aspects that are in this matrix, I do believe we can bring a lot more energy into our life by running a specific amount of frequency. How to do this, there's, you know, different steps. I think the easiest way to do this is just be in the observer point. It's the most simplest way. People do this in meditation, and you'll notice this brings a lot more energy in because you're separate from the physical world in the observer point. And then you can capture some of this energy. There's things that people do to energize the Dantian in Qigong. This is a certain specific way, and I think there's no easy way to do this. And from my understanding, it takes 6 to 8 months of practice to start to mold the Dantian and energy mechanics. But there's different modalities, I guess, you can explore. But in fact, like, I think there's a lot deeper conversations to go in here and a little bit of teaching of the steps before, so it doesn't get too confusing with that. So sorry to leave you guys like kind of with an open answer there, but I think it gets a little too deep for this conversation without a few little triggers on the way. But yeah, energy transfer in a way, I think one of the best things to do with an energy transfer is just notice where you put your attention. You know, what you're placing your attention on. And that's really where your attention goes, your energy flows.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's so right. If your attention is going on, you know, thoughts that don't serve you, if you're thinking too much, if you're walking around thinking all day of what thing's going to happen or what you're going to do, it's delusional. And we're all 99% of us are delusional in that way, in using our mind like that. Mm-hmm. So we're burning quite a bit of energy there. We're burning quite a bit of energy on the way we interact with this other monetary system, the way we interact with life. And I feel like the people that I know and I interact with really, you know, they're really just being further and further pushed away from these systems and, you know, certain companies and what they stand for and who they're connected to. We're still buying their products. We're still putting our productivity and value and attention you know, things they create to find instant gratification or dopamine or happiness or trends or feel a certain way. This spends energy. And a lot of people just don't want to support those things, but they don't really have a choice. And the further we get in with this monetary change of wealth and change of hands, is the further in hands that these private companies also get to pull the strings with us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just want to, you know, grow their own food, eat really high quality beef and meat, and families are really important, and mm-hmm. enjoying life and smiling and not worrying about, you know, a lot of things. And we're very, very far away from actually being able to do that at a large scale. So the mm-hmm. best way I think that we do that is, you know, generationally, piece by piece by piece by piece. As they say, like, strong men create good times, right? Weak men create tough times. So, you know, it's, I don't know where we're at, but I think we're at the end of weak times. Mm-hmm. We had this golden fiat age for the last 30 or so years, and it's been really nice. And I think that's changing a little bit now, piece by piece, and people will get smarter and things will advance, and there's a massive amount of opportunity coming and changing systems, and there's a lot of positivity, and it's brought you and I together, and it's brought a lot of people together that kind of resonate on the same signal. So there's no mm-hmm. There's no like disadvantage to change. It's just what you do with it. Mm-hmm. And what shows up when it's needed. And you know, so talking about Bitcoin, like, I remember I learned a lesson. Is like the last cycle, I told a lot of people about Bitcoin, you know, because I got it and I got excited. And I was just like, you got to get Bitcoin, this, but they didn't understand it. They didn't do their work. So when Bitcoin went up, they bought, then it went down, and then it went up and down. And every time it went down, I'd get a call. I'd get some anger put at me. And it's part of a cycle of going through your Bitcoin cycles. And mm-hmm. now I'm just like, hey, I'm going to, like I did today on this call, I'm just going to explain how I feel about it and what I'm going to do with it myself, and how cool I think it is that I can transfer value to the future, to my grandson, and write him a note. And the things that I like about Bitcoin, and the things why I use it, and how I store it, because I'm not looking to buy Bitcoin and sell it when it goes up to $1 million. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not. It's really just something you put away until, you know, you need it, or pass it down, or, mm-hmm. you know, have it when you're older, or whatever it may be. But along the way, as you hold it, it teaches you a lot of lessons about energy transfer and the system that you're in. And it's a bottomless hole. It's like it's a black hole of information that you learn, but it's a really big code to understand that aspect. Because as we learn consciousness, and as we learn plant medicines, and as we learn cooperation and trust, and all of these things that we've talked about in this podcast over the last 5 podcasts, there is an aspect of energy transfer. There is an aspect of economics. There is an aspect of your future self and what you can do with that energy as you transfer it. Mm-hmm. Because, like, there's nothing wrong with money. Money, if I have more money, then I can help you, the people I love and myself, and I can build the things that I want to do. There's nothing wrong with that. So mm-hmm. by all means, use it. But mm-hmm. to understand what it's built on, and to understand the other aspects of what money truly is, Bitcoin represents a perfect money, right? And it's interesting to just tap into that a little bit, learn about it, hear about it, hate it, attack it, research it, do whatever. But the more you do it, the more it provides answers. And I think that's another piece that we need in our spirituality, is understanding where we put our productivity and value and energy. And not many people talk about this. A lot of people have got a lot of success and spiritually very connected with themselves and doing very well. And they have the success, and they're feeling good with their monetary gain. And that's okay at this generation, right? But at some point, it's nice to also learn what that productivity is built on. Mm-hmm. It's an inner shadow work, you could say, right? Mm-hmm. Because most people don't understand how the monetary system works. Mm-hmm. But they use it every day, and they store their energy there.
Right.
So it's, I didn't, for the longest time. The first time somebody came to me with Bitcoin was 2016. They offered me half a Bitcoin. I was in Panama at Travis Pastrana's resort, skydiving. And a friend of a friend said, here, download a wallet. I'll teach you this Bitcoin. He was talking just like me. And Bitcoin then was $400, you know? And I said, I'm not into that digital stuff. I like cash.
Nice.
I remember this guy actually looked him up and messaged him a couple of years ago on Facebook. He didn't answer, but I was like, I remember that lesson, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for trying.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll share my Bitcoin story. Everyone's going to have their own Bitcoin story at some point.
Yes, they will.
They'll be like, everybody, their first time they got into it. And mine was a really sharp, I won't say enlightened, but he was very aware human being of what was going on. He's a fellow truther. And he told me, he wasn't the first person to tell me about Bitcoin. That was back in 2013 when it was 25 cents. And that was by this crazy guy, Vince. So it was hard to take it seriously because of where it was coming from. And I don't think Vince ended up keeping his Bitcoin. And last time I saw, he was like homeless in Santa Monica or something. So that's a whole other story. But my friend Patrick reintroduced me to Bitcoin in 2017. And I felt it. I felt the signal that I was like, this is going to be the future. I felt it there. And I was like, okay. So I bought a Bitcoin and it was, I think, $1,800. Maybe less. Could have been $1,200 even. Something, $1,200, $1,800. And it was right before that big run. It ended up going on this huge run to like almost 20,000.
20, yeah. 21, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was awesome. And I was like, I knew it. This is the thing. And then fast forward a couple years later, 2019, I'm living in Los Angeles, California at the time. And I was like, all right, I think I'm going to sell this Bitcoin. You know, I didn't grasp it. I didn't get the knowledge, like you said. And I was ready to sell it. And I actually lost my password.
Mm.
And I couldn't. And I'm like, I'm trying everything. And then didn't work. And it actually saved me that I couldn't sell it, because I ended up finding the password. It was like tucked in one of my favorite books. And I go open that book to read it one day to get a lesson. And boom, there it is. And I was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. So I ended up getting the Bitcoin back. And I ended up selling it again at its peak, around the peak. It was like 60,000 or something, 2020 or 2021. Then it wasn't until I met you again, Ryan, and then you dropped, you know, these codes on energy transfer and Bitcoin again, that I was like, yeah, no, I knew it. I should have known. I should have kept it. And then obviously got back into Bitcoin. And now I'm holding on for dear life. So thank you. And
yeah, oh, yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah.
The worst stories are going to be from the grandchildren, you know, be like, grandpa, you were Bitcoin, you didn't buy any.
Right. It's like, yeah, like, I'm not buying Apple stock 20 years ago or something. Yeah. Before the iPhone or a Tesla stock. Yeah, it's, totally. You know, it's going to be a whole thing. 100%.
It's so easy, guys. You know, take $500, buy Bitcoin and send it to your future.
Yeah.
You need to learn how to do that, and it takes work to do that. But it's just a fun experiment. It's kind of a code I'll share with you guys, because it's going to be funny too. Because let's say you say send $1,000 to 15 years in the future or 10 years in the future, and it's that $1,000 worth like $250,000 one day or $200,000, and you're like, I can't take it out, I can't touch it, but it's there, and I have to wait for it. You know, so I'm gonna have to deal with things until then. You know, it's good. It's a weird experience. It's gonna be a really weird experience. But it gives us this option, to kind of work from the future now.
Which
is really interesting, and it kind of
Cool.
goes back to time is not linear; it's a tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like my childhood is happening the same time as now. You know.
Yeah. Something's coming up, Ryan. I don't know if I've shared this with you yet, but you know, you shared Bitcoin with me and brought all these codes. Have you heard of the Ringing Cedars?
Similar. Tell me more.
Ringing Cedars. Have I told you about this yet?
That sounds familiar.
Well, it's Russian. It comes from Siberia, where there's these.
Oh, you sent me something. Yes, yes.
I did, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You haven't dove into it yet? I
not deeply, no.
Okay, you'll like it. You'll enjoy it. And I think Bitcoin is somehow going to play a factor in that in our future generations. And
oh, yes, I did look into it. Yes. The book, Anastasia.
Yeah, Anastasia. Yeah.
Yes, I did look into it. Yes. I actually have a friend. He used to be a business partner in the fashion company, and he's actually doing all of that.
Wow.
In BC on the island, in northern BC.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Small world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I did look into that. It's very interesting. It is really interesting to see these people so brilliant with the ideas about how the system works and trust and birth certificates and currency and water and psychedelics and plant medicines and this. And it's like, there's a piece missing. It's just like, study Bitcoin a little bit, just mm-hmm. a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it starts to connect the energy transfer.
It does.
You know, it's really fascinating. And I'm speaking from thousands of hours of study and lessons and ups and downs and feelings and holding on for dear life and all of this. But I'm really at a very calm point right now, is that 10-minute blocks, Godspeed. And, you're storing years of work now, you can, where Bitcoin is at, and you're throwing it to your future self. So you're setting mm-hmm. your future self up, instead of the debt is like, I want to have everything now and I'll pay off later. It's kind mm-hmm. of, you're setting up your future self. And you know, when you've ever made a really good choice in life and you thank your former self, I'm so glad mm-hmm. I did that. It's mm-hmm. more of that.
It is.
It's more of that. And, so, I mean, in the links below, I can put a couple of my favorite books that I like and a couple podcasts to dive into. And it's free will choice. Like, you know, one thing they say about Bitcoin is Bitcoin doesn't need you, but you need Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Bitcoin doesn't care. There's no marketing team. There's no CEO. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. It was released. The code was released to us. As a mm-hmm. gift. And personally, I think it's more important than the internet.
Right.
The ability to transfer. Yeah. The ability to transfer value.
What about, that's a big statement. What about that thing I sent you, Ryan, where that guy is talking about that it was by the CIA that introduced.
There's lots of FUD. There's technology.
Just for the listeners, it was a video I sent Ryan that guy talks about. There was a. What was it, an article that came out on by the CIA that how to create a cryptocurrency back in 1996 or something like that. And but what was interesting, Ryan, was it wasn't the guy's name like Satoshi Sakamori or something?
Maybe, yeah. So Satoshi Nakamoto, sometimes people say it means, can't remember, it means something about Illuminati or system.
Enlightened one or something, yeah.
Then there's a Japanese girl that translated it, said it means to be enlightened within a book. Satoshi Nakamoto, which released the Bitcoin, was either a group or a person. Nobody knows actually who he is. There's actually a guy named Craig Wright that forked Bitcoin. It's called mm-hmm. BSV. And he claims to be Satoshi Nakamoto. And he's, you know, everyone thinks he works at CIA. Mm. But he goes around trying to sue people that he's Satoshi, wow. and they use his name and all of this. It's funny. There is so much FUD and information, and just like anything, that people, when people don't do enough work, when they don't look at things and study them enough, because they don't have to. The thing mm-hmm. with Bitcoin is it doesn't reward like the system does. It's not going to reward you $1 million today. Mm-hmm. It's going to reward holding proof of work, conviction, responsibility, you know, doing your work and understanding what it is, it will reward you down the road after you've gone through the bullshit. And what this does is it creates a really, really strong foundational layer that everyone mm-hmm. that's been holding for multiple years knows this. They know all about this. So it's a very interesting layer that's building brick by brick by brick by the people that understand it the most are the base layer of it. So a lot of people, when you tell them some sort of information that doesn't align with something they already know or their belief systems, they try to look at every angle of Bitcoin that something's not right. It was created by CIA. It was done this. This is better. And that's okay, because Bitcoin's meant for that.
Mm-hmm.
Please come up with every single thing and attack Bitcoin. But the thing is, with Bitcoin, it's open source.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complete open source. You can verify mm-hmm. its entire code. Mm-hmm. You can look at it and see if there's any traps or tricks or anything through the history. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing. Like, then there's people that go through that open code all the time. And people have stolen that code. A lot of the other cryptocurrencies are based on Bitcoin. Mm. And also Bitcoin wasn't the first cryptocurrency.
Wow.
People think it was the first cryptocurrency. There was cryptocurrencies in the 80s that they were attempting to make. They've been trying to attempt to make digital currency since the internet for a very long time. Bitcoin was, some people say it was invented by a group called Satoshi Nakamoto, or it was, I believe it was streamed in. I believed it was discovered. I have my fun little experiments that I do that Bitcoin is just a name. Bitcoin is just a name. It's a name that our world or our incarnation gave it. Bitcoin, it's just a name. Bitcoin is a code. It's just a set of algorithmic code that was placed and then it's running. And then we put energy into it in order to mine it. And then when they bought the first pizza for 20,000 Bitcoin, which is like $500 million now, it made it a transaction. And then it went into, you know, Silk Road, and it was used to transact, but it's going through the same levels that gold did to become a currency, right? And it's like, it's very young. Bitcoin is only 14 years old, but it could be an energy transfer. And this is just something that I like to play with from the old world. Let's say Tartaria or something, or a free energy world. Imagine a free energy world where there was no money. Mm-hmm. But a transfer of attention and work, right? So if you were doing productive assets and working on beautiful things, and then people came to watch you play your music or buy your product, you would create it. You would have a transfer like a Bitcoin, right? And those people would transfer their energy and then transfer it to attention. And the best possible creativity and productive and most valuable asset towards that society, everyone would naturally pour their energy and attention towards that and transfer their energy to that, to build that so that more people could enjoy it. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then in a free energy society, like the proof of work aspect would be caught through the free energy in the air. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine like a free energy, like healthy, different from society where there's no pharmaceuticals, where there's no poisons, where there's none of this. I can't imagine that system being built on an expansive debt system like we have. I can't ever see it. I don't, it just doesn't reward work. It doesn't reward, like, it's not fair. It doesn't lead to like great things. It leads to the few people having great things, giving permission to other people who can interact with those great things, or control over what they're taught, a lot of the things that we don't agree with the current system. But I can't see, I see a completely different way of thinking. And because we were born into this system with this type of thinking in monetary, I remember I was in grade one or two and we did exercises in the gymnasium of like buying things with paper money. You know, I was taught this system since I was born. I was doing lemonade stands outside and taking change, you know, but we don't know anything else. So it's really hard. It's really hard to understand Bitcoin looking through the perception and frame of only what you know, like looking from one system into another system.
Right.
It's like trying to understand an alien spaceship from looking at it from the outside. You know, it's just like you got to be taught how to think or how to interact. So one of the cool things is that it's very intuitive as you go and learn it. And it's just fun. Like, buy $10 of Bitcoin and send it to your friend and just see how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it go up, watch it go down. There's no rush. You know, if you rush into it and you don't understand it, you'll sell it, you know? And it's like, you might not meet Ryan, or you might not meet somebody, you know? And it's just something, it's cool that we have the choice to interact with something like this, and people are seeing the value. And you'll get to a point in your journey when you've learned at a certain level about Bitcoin that you just get this aha orange pilled moment. And it's very commonly known and said orange pilled. And it's interesting to see people when they get orange pilled, you're just like, holy fuck. I can't believe I know this before everyone else. It's like one of those aha early moments.
Right.
But you get deep enough and it clicks, and it's pretty cool. It's difficult for certain academics or certain people that are really financially off to understand it because it competes with their what they've done their entire life and their wealth, and they don't need it. Mm-hmm. You know, they probably won't need it for a long time, or they can buy billions of dollars and trade it. They just don't need it, right?
Right. Yeah.
And that's, I don't compare myself to them because I'm not a billionaire, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not these people. But I feel like I'm walking my path. I feel like I'm doing my spiritual work, and I'm cleaning, and I'm doing my business work and my family work and my personal work. And I'm building a future for my family and my son. And it really aligns to me, like what's behind it, you know, and, mm-hmm. and what it's about and interacting with it and how it rewards over time. I think it's a great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, the lessons you learn are based on the energy and attention and quality that you put into it. If you put good quality time into reading some books and understanding it and going through it, you'll be rewarded with knowledge first, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And this is the Satoshi Nakamoto, to be enlightened within a book. And knowledge is the reward of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest reward. It's a signal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this knowledge comes from and is associated with a lot of things that you picked up and learned, and it gives you an alternative perspective or system to compare what you only know now to, which at least gives you two perspectives. Mm-hmm. And whether you need it or not, I would say 14 years in, Bitcoin technology is one of the most brilliant advanced technologies I've ever seen in my life, and it excites me every day to see what's being built on it and what it's been doing and how it works through and how people use it to trade shit coins and how people use it to dump and buy. It doesn't matter. It still does this 10-minute blocks. It doesn't matter what you do with it. You know, eventually, mm-hmm. you know, either it serves you or it doesn't. But it's been a great teacher to knowledge. And it's quite interesting, like, learning the story of Satoshi and how he did things, you know, and how Bitcoin can't be a security. You know, it's globally recognized as a commodity right now, as an asset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you can't touch it. If you, you know, you can try to block and add taxes in and all of these things with different countries are trying to do, but then you just go where you're treated better geopolitically. If one country taxes Bitcoin so much, then people move to a country that says, hey, we don't tax Bitcoin at all. Move here.
Yeah.
You know,
El Salvador.
Yeah, geopolitically, it's interesting once it crosses that layer, you know, and people keep saying Bitcoin's a bubble. Well, there's two countries in the world that has now made it an official currency. You can look it up on Wikipedia. There's countries mining it. There's kingdoms. What is that kingdom in Bhutan? Bhutan, they've been mining for 5 years secretly.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Like, the big players are getting in. El Salvador has created a proof of concept already. They're up. MicroStrategy also. And it, you know, people have a lot of feelings and opinions and emotions. Bitcoin's this. What if it does this? What if it does that? What if it does this? You know, look at it, study it, you know, answer all those questions for you the more you look into it. But what about the system you're in now?
Mm-hmm.
You're not worried about that at all because it's been fucking you for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, my $100, you know, 5 years ago, it does not buy the same thing.
No kidding. Yeah.
So I need to work twice as hard now,
mm-hmm.
twice as smart to catch up.
Yeah.
Right. So that's not favorable, especially in the long term,
mm-hmm.
unless something changes. So we know that there is going to be some sort of change happening. It's almost, this conversation is not about making money or making more money or being wealthy. It's just about tapping into understanding your energy transfer on an economic level and where you put your productivity and value, mm-hmm. and just getting the knowledge from that. So you have another perspective. Mm-hmm. We're born into a system at its peak, and it's okay. Like, nobody has to do anything. Nobody cares. Like, if you learn Bitcoin or not, it's just offering a code that I put 5 years into.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've learned thus far, and I have much more to learn. But I'm just really excited to start sending Bitcoin to the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I plan to have 3 kids and then I can think about the timing of, you know, when I'm going to send these transactions to them, what age are they going to be? How's going to them to have their kids, you know? And it's like, as you do that, what energetic happens now? Like when I actually do that, does it change the probability of my future?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very,
it does. Yeah, no, yeah. For sure. It is. It might be you coming back in 3 generations to receive those Bitcoins.
Right. Yeah. Which gives you your own bank to, you know, pour energy into things that you want to without the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's a guy, it's still like, you might feel late into Bitcoin because it's 44,000 and it started at 10 cents, but really we're very, 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 very early into this technology. So early that 1% of the world understands it. You know,
that's
so
right. I remember you saying a while ago, Ryan, there's what, 20 million, how many millionaires is there in the world? Do we know this number?
I can look it up.
Let's look it up.
I believe there was 50 million millionaires. millionaires. So not even close to each one could have one Bitcoin.
That's right. It'd be like 0.3 of a Bitcoin each. And you know those millionaires are going to want a Bitcoin. So it really just puts things in perspective of how valuable these things are, especially the finite and the halving. How often is the halving again?
About every 4 years.
Every 4 years there's a halving. And then how many millions of Bitcoins have been lost? Like the guy that lost his pass key.
They don't know about, you can't tell because they haven't moved, but they guess that about 4 million to 5 million have been lost.
Wow. So it might be, we might only be around 16 or 17 million Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, acquiring one Bitcoin for your family in 2 generations is going to be rare. You know, it's like, it's generation, wow. It's future generational wealth in a system that you choose to want to be in the future. And if you don't, if you're late to feel like you're late to getting in Bitcoin now, just buy some now and send it to your future. Mm-hmm. Or do you trust yourself to hold it? You know, it's another thing. It's another lesson. Mm-hmm. It's all a lesson. It's a great lesson. It's kind of like this frequency. You know, like the whole world is going up and down and changing and left and right and war here and this here and ups and this. Bitcoin is just this like thing that has been doing the same thing for 14 years. Exact same code, just keeps moving step by step by step. And people will start to appreciate that ground layer is being built and to interact with it. But yeah,
it's a beast.
It's a beast. It's a beast. It teaches major lessons. It's like ayahuasca.
I love it. Yeah. I love it, Ryan. Well, thank you for sharing lots of knowledge that you've accumulated over the last 5 years. Major codes were dropped today on Bitcoin and energy transfer and how that applies. So yeah, really grateful. I'm sure the listeners are as well. So thank you for sharing. And that's about enough time for today. So we got to wrap it up.
Let's do it. Thank you, guys. Next week, we'll go back to different codes, I guess you could say.
All good.
We'll go back to some different codes, but just in the spirit of kind of what I'm sensing right now, I felt like talking about energy transfer and Bitcoin because it's gonna change here a lot over the next 2 years. It's gonna really surprise people, a lot of the stuff that's happening. So
awesome.
Good timing.
Yep. It sure is, Ryan. Divine timing. Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, guys.